It is my great pleasure to welcome everyone to Sri Radha Gopinath's Sunday festival, wherein we come together in this spirit of servant of the servant of the servant to help enrich one another's sincere dedication to the path of pure devotion. Lord Chaitanya descended into this world to freely give the gift of the pure treasure of love of God. He has entrusted this supreme treasure within the hearts of his devotees. The Lord has ordered his devotees to share that great wealth amongst one another without any sense of egoism, lethargy, or envy, and to distribute this great wealth to all the poverty-stricken souls within this world who are bereft of the great joy of loving service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. To understand what is truly valuable in life is something that is very rare in today's world. What is, from a spiritual point of view, utterly worthless. People are dedicating the precious energy of their lives to achieve. And simultaneously neglecting, ignoring the crown jewel of all valuable treasures. This is the most sorrowful condition of the world today. Thus, Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is Krishna himself, has so mercifully appeared in the role of his own devotee to teach us the path of perfection. Lord Chaitanya taught Trinadapi Sunichena Taror Iva Sihishnuna Amanina Manadena Kirtaniya Sadahari. We should feel ourselves humble like the straw in the street, tolerant like tree. Tree is very forgiving, forbearing, eager to offer all respect to others and expect none in return. Thus we could chant the holy name of the Lord with great spiritual ecstasy. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains that without humility, we never really begin the true path of transcendence. Sanatana Goswami, he reveals how the greatest personalities in the spiritual world are the most humble. He explains that the great hunger and thirst to offer more love to Krishna, to offer more service to Krishna, the pure soul's inability to be satiated in how much they're loving and serving Krishna, It is that hunger that is the original mother of all humility. In this sense, the more we love Krishna, the humbler we become. If our devotion is superficial, artificial, accordingly, we can be proud that I'm a great devotee. I am better than others. If you want to calculate how you're making spiritual progress, this is a simple system to evaluate yourself. Do I consider myself better than others? Do I require respect? Am I harsh or offensive to others due to ego? This, as well as on a grosser level, how I am becoming detached from material enjoyment, is the way we can understand whether we're making spiritual progress. It is a mystery, because the more we make spiritual progress, really, we become humble and consider everyone better than ourselves. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught us by his own example. In separation from Krishna, he dove deeply into the Ganga. Lord Nityananda Prabhu Haridas Thakur had to take him out. He said, "Why? Why have you taken me out?" And they asked, "Lord, why did you want to take your life?" His response was that I have no love for Krishna. What is the use of living without love for Krishna? If I had even a speck of love of Krishna, I would not be able to maintain my life due to separation from him. The fact that I'm still breathing, the fact that my heart still beats, although I'm in separation from Krishna, means there's not a single trace of love in my heart. So my life is worthless. Of course, no one has the right to take their lives. But the Lord wanted to demonstrate by his own words an example. What is the qualities of one who actually loves God? The purpose of life is to purify our existence by absorbing our body, our mind, our words, our very life in Krishna. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he would perform his Sankirtan with the devotees, it was an eternal experience of total absorption in Krishna. Krishna has appeared in the deity. Krishna has appeared in the Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and other holy scriptures. Krishna has appeared in the association of devotees. Krishna has appeared within the service we offer to him. Krishna has appeared within the sound of his holy names. How do we absorb ourselves in these nine processes of devotional service that Prahlad Maharaj has explained? That is the whole function of life. Thus, Srimad Bhagavatam declares, the two Vedic principles, of whom all others are subordinate servitors to, is to always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. The more we absorb our consciousness in Krishna, the more all of our material attachments and ego evaporates. Krishna is like the sun. Maya is like darkness. In the presence of the sun, darkness cannot stand. How to keep the light of the sun of Krishna always shining brightly within our hearts? That is the goal of life, and it is also the means of how to achieve the goal of life. Whether we're in kirtan, whether we're performing drama or watching drama, worshiping the deities, cooking for the deities, whether we're chanting japa, praying, or even when we're engaged in our ordinary activities, we should truly be longing for the success of our efforts, which is to be absorbed in Krishna. Lord Chaitanya taught that the highest example of absorption of Krishna is the gopis of Vrindavan. Because their absorption is deepest, their devotion includes all other levels of devotional service. This was described in the conversation by Lord Chaitanya and Ramananda Rai. The various levels of pure unalloyed devotion. And how each subsequent higher level we come in devotional service, all the preliminary realizations and experiences are included within that. There is Santa Ras, then Dasya Ras, Sakya Ras, Batsalya Ras, and ultimately the love of gopis. Srila Rupa Goswami and the great acharyas, they do not instruct us become a gopi. They instruct us to follow the spirit, to follow in the footsteps of the residents of Vrindavan. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his Shikshastakam prayers reveals in a very practical way what we should strive for. Sunyayatam jagat sarvam govinda virahename. Feeling separation from Lord Sri Krishna, he is considering a moment to be like 12 years or more. In the absence of Krishna, he is feeling that the whole universal creation is a dreary void. What an incredible realization. We have so many distractions. What we see with our eyes, some beautiful thing or some beautiful person, some words of gossip that people are speaking or writing about, different types of music, different things for the tongues to taste, different objects, becoming famous, becoming wealthy, becoming influential. The gross and subtle energies of material life are creating so many temptations, obstacles, impediments on the path to pure love. Because we see value in these things. But Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu describes that this whole earth planet, even Swarga Loka, where King Indra and the demigods are residing in great opulence, even Mahaloka, Janaloka, and Tapaloka, where the greatest rishis and sages are absorbed in yajna, in meditation, in complete state of peace. Even Brahmaloka, Abrahma Bhuvana Loka Punaravartanojana. Lord Krishna declares that Brahmaloka is a place of misery, although it's the highest place of material enjoyment. You could live for trillions of years without disease, no demons, no problems. Everything is nice, always. But Lord Krishna says it's a place of misery. And Lord Chaitanya said it's a dreary void. It's a desert without an oasis. Bereft of Krishna. How to cultivate that spirit cannot be done artificially. It must be pursued by following in the footsteps of the great souls, by learning how to be servant of the servant of the servant, by utilizing our very, very precious time to read the scriptures of Krishna, to hear the classes about Krishna, to associate with devotees of Krishna, to take the prasad of Krishna, to offer our prayers to Krishna, to see the beautiful deity of Krishna, and to take shelter of Krishna, who appears in such a way that he can be our constant companion at all times, in all places, in all situations, by chanting his holy name.
Krishna, 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 Krishna.
Srila Sanatan Goswami explains in such a way that each and every one of us can see through the window of his mercy into the spiritual pastimes of the Lord in the spiritual world. In his explanation of Srimad Bhagavatam, he describes the nature of the absorption of the residents of Vrindavan. One day, Akrura came on his beautiful royal chariot, driven by very powerful horses. He was sent by Kamsa. Kamsa was the most frustrated man, perhaps in the whole world. All of his material desires were fulfilled, but he was miserable. Why? Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita that he is death personified. Kamsa was fortunate in the sense that he was alerted that Krishna was going to kill him. Now, most people in this world, they're afraid of death, but they don't recognize that that's Krishna coming to get me. So their fear of death is really of no spiritual value. But Kamsa was constantly absorbed in thinking of Krishna, knowing that Krishna is death who's going to take me away. And the more you have, the more you fear you could lose. And Kamsa had everything. He was a wicked, cruel person. He imprisoned his brother-in-law and his cousin's sister. He put his father behind bars in prison so that he could take the throne for himself. He was as powerful as 10,000 elephants. Any one of his arms could practically defeat entire armies. That was his power. He had mystic cities. He was very intelligent. And all the greatest mystic asuras were surrendered to serving his feet. Such power, such wealth, such accomplishment. But he was always in anxiety that death is coming for me in the form of Krishna. So he sent asura after asura to Vrindavan. You know the story. When Krishna was only hardly a day or two old, he sent Putana. When he was only about 3 months old, he sent Shakatasura. At the time of his first birthday, he sent Trinavarta. Soon after that, he sent Vatsasura, Bakasura, Prilambasura, Aghasura, Denukasura, Vyomasura, Keshi, Aristasura. These are just a few of the ones that we know about. But actually, he was sending demons every day. Every day. Can you imagine how he was frustrated? That every day he would get the news that these horribly powerful Rakshasa asuras were playfully sent to the abode of death by a little cowherd boy. The devotees find great bliss in hearing these pastimes. Kamsa actually was very, very much absorbed in Krishna. But because he was absorbed in an unfavorable way, he was not very happy. This Mukunda Dat explained during Mahaprakash Lila that only those who are most fortunate to be your sincere devotees find happiness when they see you. When those who are envious see you, it disturbs them. They feel misery. Because Krishna reveals himself according to how we surrender to him. So Kamsa was beside himself, worrying in miserable anxiety. He couldn't sleep at night. He was just seeing Krishna coming to him at all times. He made all his systematic plans to kill Krishna. Even before he appeared on earth, he was making plans. But man proposes and God disposes. So ultimately, he decided, we have to take Krishna out of Gokul. If he comes to Mathura, then he is defeatable. Just like in athletics, it is an athletic strategy that when you're playing in your own field or your own court, you have a better chance of winning than in somebody else's. So Kamsa was thinking, if we take Krishna away from Vrindavan and bring him to my kingdom, my abode of Mathura, then we'll have all systems to destroy him. And he made all these plans and contingent plans and contingent plans. First there will be Kuvalayapida, very, very powerful
murderous elephant, not an ordinary elephant. This elephant was hundreds and thousands of times more powerful than any other elephant. He was an asura in the form of an elephant. And if somehow or other, which is impossible, if somehow or other Krishna gets by Kuvalayapita, then we have the two champion killer wrestlers, Chanura Mustika. They will, in the arena that I have built, they will certainly slay Krishna. And if they don't, then all the other wrestlers who are the associates of Chanura Mustika, they will all attack and they will kill Krishna and Balaram. And if that doesn't work, then Krishna will die at my hands. He was a very, very strategic person. Now, how to bring Krishna to Mathura? If he sends an invitation, he knows Krishna's gonna ignore it. But Kamsa is so intelligent. He knows that Krishna cannot refuse the prayers of his devotee. So his actual understanding of the scriptures he was using against Krishna. Hiranyakashipu also, Ravana also. They were all great scholars of the Vedic literatures. But they use all their knowledge to fulfill their own egoistic desires. That was the problem. So Krishna is always favorable to his devotees. He always fulfills the prayers of his devotees. Who is the best devotee in all of Mathura? He couldn't send Vasudeva and Devaki because that would counteract the strategy. He would send Akrura. And Akrura would explain to Krishna the hardships, the agonies of Vasudeva, Devaki, Ugrasena, and all the Yadus, and appeal to him, please come. Kamsa's inviting you. Now, why would Akrura, who's a very, very good devotee, son of a great sage, why would he do this? The scriptures explain you cannot always understand the mind of a great Vaishnav. Externally, he was going to seize the opportunity. Externally, he was going on a mission to bring Krishna and Balaram to Mathura, to meet Kuvalayapita, Chanura Mustika, and all the other wrestlers, and ultimately Kamsa. But internally, he knew there was no question that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is a Chuta, he is a Jitta, he is unconquerable. Therefore, I've been longing for so many years to see Krishna. He's my worshipable deity. I'm stuck here in Mathura. I'm hearing about his beautiful pastimes as a cowherd boy. I'm hearing about his wonderful amorous leelas with gopis. I want to meet Krishna and Balaram. I want to see them with these eyes. I want to worship them. So he took this as an opportunity to worship the Lord. He boarded his chariot. And all the way from Mathura to Braj, he was immersed in offering prayers of love and devotion to Sri Krishna. When he came into Braj Bhumi, he happened to see footprints of Krishna, which are unmistakable to the devotees. Just by seeing the footprints in the very soft dust of Braj, Akrura, who was a very, very powerful warrior and prince, he got off of his chariot and rolled in the dust of those footprints, weeping incessant tears, praying to Krishna that, please, Krishna, understand, I'm not coming as Kamsa's representative. I'm coming as your devotee to surrender my life to you. He heard the cows being milked because it was the evening time. And there, near Nanda Maharaja's Goshala, in the beautiful pasture grounds of Vrindavan, he met with Sri Krishna and Balaram, and they took him home. They honored Akrura with such loving hospitality. And ultimately, after exchanging so many nice words, Akrura revealed his mission confidentially to Nanda Maharaj, that I have come to invite Krishna and Balaram, and you and the cowherd men can also come, you're all invited, to a very, very great ceremony that's going to take place in Mathura. Kamsa's inviting you, he is the king. Everyone was very unhappy. Now, although he only spoke to Nanda, Krishna and Balaram, there are no secrets in Braj Bhumi. That night, the news began to spread. Whoever heard the news, the Brijavasis, the villages even beyond Braj Bhumi, their hearts were broken. Even stones were breaking. Even dry wood was weeping, hearing this tragic news. Akrura has come to take Krishna away from us. All night, the Brijabasis, they lamented. They cried incessant tears. Again and again and again, they were fainting. When very early morning came, Yashoda Mai, who was crying like a small, like a cow whose calf was about to be devoured by a tiger, she hid Krishna in a secluded place so that Nanda Maharaj, the Gopas, Akrura, nobody would be able to find him. She hid Krishna first behind curtains in a very secluded place that nobody goes. And then she put so many objects in front of the curtains so no one would possibly even suspect that anything could be there. When morning came, Krishna was nowhere to be seen. At that time, Akrura, with very eloquent words, steeped in compassion, he presented so many arguments to try to convince Nanda Maharaj to bring Krishna. Some of the arguments were that Vasudev and Devaki, they are Krishna's very poor and aged parents. Only for Krishna's sake have they been cast into prison for so many years. It was only for Krishna's sake that all the Yadus had to suffer so tragically. They're Krishna's devotees. Vasudeva is your brother. He will be killed with his wife. They're going through tragic suffering. But Krishna is supreme. He's all-powerful. There is no danger for Krishna. Please bring Krishna. I guarantee, I promise, he will easily slay Kamsa and then return to Brajbhumi. Nanda Maharaj's heart became very soft when he heard about the plight of the Yadu dynasty. So he approached Yashoda Mai and he presented to her, "We must bring Krishna to Akrura. We must. There is no alternative. Bring Krishna." Yashoda Mai, she did not believe it, but at the same time, how could she disobey? Such plaintive words of sympathy toward the great souls of Mathura. So Yashoda Mai brought Krishna. When she brought him, the gopis of Vrindavan, they began to cry so loudly that it filled all directions. Their beautiful lotus eyes were fixed, unblinkingly gazing at the beautiful form of Shyamasundara. Yashoda then came out with Gopal. She put Krishna's hands in the hands of Nanda. And then she put Krishna's hand in the hand of Akrura. She turned to Nanda Maharaj and said, "There is no one in this world I trust in this instance except you, my dear husband. You have promised me that you will bring Krishna back immediately after he fulfills his work." With these words, Yashoda Mai cried incessant tears. She fainted and got up, fainted and got up. In that state of weeping, she entered into her very empty, lonely house. The gopis, they ran to Yashoda Mai's house and they asked, "How could you do this? How could you possibly give Krishna to that cruel Akrura?" Yashoda Mai revealed her heart, said that my husband, he is Krishna's dearest devotee. He has given his word that he will bring Krishna back. And Akrura is the son of a great saint. He loves like my Krishna. He's a great personality. We have to trust such great souls. Yashoda was very simple. Her heart was very faithful. Her heart easily believed what Akrura and Nanda Maharaj said. Upon hearing her words, the gopis were very angry. They rebuked Yashoda Mai. How could you put the hand of your beloved son into the paw of an all-devouring, man-eating tiger? And how after that can you enter into your empty, lonely house and live? Without Krishna, your entire home will simply blaze and be burnt to ashes by the flames of separation. Then the gopis ran outside. They ran out to find Krishna. There they found Krishna, who was already standing on the chariot of Akrura. The gopis, they cried, so loud from their hearts, weeping and weeping, begging Krishna to stay. Seeing the plight of the Braj Gopis' absorption in love, Nanda Maharaj, Akrura, Balaram, Krishna, and all the Gopas, they became stunned. They wept incessant tears. The entire pastime just stopped. No one could say anything. It came to the point where everyone there fell unconscious to see the plight of the Braja Gopis in their imminent separation from Sri Krishna. Krishna somehow or other came back to consciousness. When he saw the condition of gopis, he understood that they were on the verge of death. In fact, their hearts had already died. Feeling great, great sympathy for his most beloved devotees, Lord Krishna somehow or other composed himself and glanced upon gopis in such a way to restore their lives. And then, when everyone else was in an unconscious state, Krishna came off the chariot and took the Braja Gopis into a secluded forest grove. After some time, Akrura came back to consciousness and took note that Krishna's gone. He's left the chariot. Where could he be? Then Akrura turned to Balaramji and explained to Balaramji that your father is Vasudev. They are being threatened. They have suffered endless turmoil and grief in the absence of Krishna. They are being harassed 24 hours a day by cruel Kamsa. Please, they will not survive unless we bring Krishna to Vrindavan. We bring Krishna to Mathura. Balaram was convinced. He came off the chariot with Akrura. They began to search for Krishna. Balaramji knew exactly how to find Krishna anywhere he may be in Vrindavan. Srila Sanatana Goswami explains how he searched for Krishna. Because he had the vision to see his footprints wherever he may have gone. They followed the footprints a long distance away. And then, from a far distance, they could see Krishna accompanied by his gopis in a very secluded grove in the deep forests of Vrindavan. Seeing this, Akrura began to speak very, very loudly so that every word he said, Krishna could hear clearly, although he was a distance away. He cried out, Krishna, it is exclusively for your sake that your mother and father, who are aged and poor, have been put in prison and are being constantly harassed. In fact, every day, Kamsa draws his sword and holds it over their head, just waiting for the white opportunity to kill them. They are suffering lamentation and grief. And the Yadus, They only live in hope that you will come and rescue them from the wrath of Kamsa. Please, Krishna, please understand that these are your devotees. They're suffering due to their faithful, dedicated, loyal service and their love for you. Please do not neglect your devotees. Please take them out of their misery. Please save them for death. Please come to Mathura. Kamsa is such a demon. He boasts that there is no one more powerful than him. Even the demigods shake in fear at Kamsa's wrath. What about your poor aged parents? We all know your prowess, Krishna. Please, don't neglect your devotees. Come and save them. When Krishna heard the words of Akrura, he looked to his elder brother, Balaram. Balaram was making gestures that he agreed with everything Akrura was speaking. Krishna's heart felt with grief to think of the suffering of his dear devotees in Mathura. His heart also burned with rage toward Kamsa. He immediately left that forest grove to the place where Akrura and Balaram were standing. The gopis were weeping and crying. They followed right behind Krishna. Akrura could see that it was impossible for Krishna to separate himself from the gopis. Akrura took blades of grass and placed them within his teeth, which is the ultimate symbol of humbling oneself before another. With straw within his teeth, folded hands, he bowed down, weeping at the feet of each and every gopi, begging them, please give your permission for Krishna to come to Mathura. O divine goddesses, O most blessed of all Krishna's devotees, please do not stop him. Krishna's mother and father, Nanda and Yashoda, are on the verge of death. They're suffering. Please let Krishna come and rescue them. Please, O goddesses, don't be the cause of the death of the entire Yadu dynasty. The gopis replied to Akrura, alas, alas, O cruel one, you are a liar. How could anyone else be the parent of the beloved son of Nanda and Yashoda? We do not believe you that Krishna has any other parents. Why you are creating this lying propaganda? Please, Akrura, don't kill all the residents of Gokul by taking Krishna away. Please, Akrura, do not crush the hearts of innocent, chaste women who have given their lives and souls to Krishna. Krishna seeing Balaram and hearing Akrura's words, agreed to go. So Akrura ran as fast as he could to get the chariot. While he was away, the gopis were alone with Krishna. They cried tears of love from their hearts. Each of the gopis fell at Krishna's feet. With choked voices, they offered prayers. That, O son of Nanda and Yashoda, we cannot live without you. We have no other shelter than you. Please do not abandon your helpless maidservants. For your sake, we have made the forest into our home, and we have made our homes into a forest. For your sake, we have made enemies our friends, and our friends became our enemies. For your sake, we drank poison and tasted nectar, and we rejected nectar as poison. For your sake, we have abandoned everything, our families, our chastity, our reputation. We have sacrificed our entire lives for you and you alone. Without you, we will die. When in the morning you go into the pastures with Balaram and your cowherd boyfriends, every moment seems like 12 years or more for us. The only thing that keeps us alive during the day is the hope that you will return in the evening. It is that hope that somehow or other allows us to painfully pass the time of the day. You are going to Mathura on the invitation of Kamsa to be surrounded by the demons who are the friends of Kamsa. How do we know? How do we know what will happen? We will die worrying about you in that place. And Krishna, when you are in Mathura, will you ever remember us? When the gopis spoke to Krishna in this way, Krishna was stunned. Incessant tears bathed his entire body. He wiped his own tears and then very graciously, lovingly wiped the tears of the gopis. For some time he could not speak. And then with voice choked with emotion, he responded to gopis. He said, please do not worry. I will easily kill that impotent Kamsa. Have faith. Have faith in my words. I will soon return to you. If you cry at this time when I'm about to leave, then you will make everything inauspicious. Please have faith. I will return and stop your crying. At that moment, Nanda, Yashoda Mai and all the others arrived at the scene. Then Akrura arrived with the chariot. Krishna climbed onto the chariot. The gopis, how they cried. They cried and they cried and they cried. Then they fainted. And they transformed all the dust of Vrindavan into thick mud due to the extraordinary tears that flowed from their eyes. When Yashoda Mai saw the gopi's state, her heart was broken. She cried pitifully. They all looked at Nanda Maharaj. Nanda Maharaj was as unhappy as anyone there. He spoke. He said, "Do not think that I'm not as unhappy as you. Please do not believe that I think that there can be any other parents of Krishna than me and Yashoda. I reject these propagandic lies of Akrura. Krishna has no other parents than us." Please believe me. I will not leave Krishna in Mathura. As soon as Kamsa is killed, as soon as Vasudeva and Devaki is released, I promise you, I will return with Krishna. I know how much you love Krishna. I know that none of you could possibly survive if Krishna does not come home with me to Vrindavan. You have my word. You have my promise. As soon as the work is done, I will bring Krishna back. With those words, Akrura, he slashed the whip and the horses began to move. As soon as the chariot began to move, gopis ran after the chariot. Some were running alongside. Some grabbed onto the chariot, trying to somehow or other, with all their strength, stop it. Other gopis threw their bodies under the wheel of the chariot. Other gopis simply became stunned, weeping and crying. Other gopis fainted. Other gopis became like statues. Immobile in separation. The chariot could not move any further. The cows, calves, buffaloes, deers, and all the other animals of Vrindavan circled around the chariot so that it could not go any further. All the animals were, without blinking, gazing upon the beautiful form of Shyamasundara, weeping and crying, begging the Lord to stay. The birds, all the birds of Braja, were flying in circles over Krishna, pouring rain of their teardrops upon Krishna, Balaram, and Akrura. The leaves of the tree suddenly withered. The stones and trees of the mountains just fell off from the mountains. The lotus flowers wilted. And River Jamuna and all other rivers instantly became so thin, and they flowed upstream. Krishna looked upon the gopis and again bathed his entire body with all of his clothes with the tears of his own love. seeing the gopis, Krishna fainted. Seeing Krishna fainting, Akura stood behind him to hold him up. He understood this is the only possible opportunity to go. Krishna is unconscious. And everyone around was just stunned seeing Krishna in that state. Akura took his whip and snapped it upon the horses. Go, go! Very fast as they possibly could, the horses began to move forward. All the residents of Vrindavan were weeping, crying, screaming, fainting. And the gopis were running as fast as they could, and they were hurling their bodies under the wheels of the chariot. Akura was an expert chariot driver. He was swerving this way and that way to somehow or other avoid killing the gopis by running over them. Somehow or other, Akura escaped while Krishna was unconscious standing upon his chariot. The gopis stood like painted pictures, as did Nanda Yashoda and the gopas, watching the chariot of Akura pass into the horizon. When there was no trace of the chariot, they did not move. They simply gazed upon the dust left behind by the wheels of the chariot. Sanatana Goswami explains that it is indescribable to accurately portray the condition of the residents of Vrindavan when Akura left with Krishna and Balaram. Immediately, Nanda Maharaj and the gopas, they jumped on their carts, their ox carts, and began to somehow or other try to follow Akura in the direction of Mathura. Akura then came to the Brahma Lake, which is also called Akura Tirtha. When he came upon that beautiful lake of the Jamuna, he saw Krishna was still unconscious, and he began to offer eloquent prayers, prayers of love and devotion that woke Krishna from his fainted condition, revived his original consciousness. At that time, Krishna and Balaram went to take their bath in Jamuna. And Akura noticed that Krishna had become Lord Vishnu and Balaram had become Anantashesha. How is this possible? He ran back to the chariot and he saw Krishna and Balaram were simultaneously still on the chariot. And Krishna smiled at him and said, "Why do you look so surprised? Did you see something wonderful?" From the Brahma Lake, Akura brought Krishna to Mathura. Krishna, upon arriving in Mathura, gave such ecstatic happiness to all the residents of Mathura. To the garland maker, Sudama, who just offered him a simple garland, Krishna reciprocated with the benediction that he would attain pure love of God at that moment, that every desire he had while living in this world will be fulfilled, and after leaving this body, he will immediately be promoted to the spiritual world. And to the washerman who would not give Krishna the clothes he asked for, in fact, the washerman blasphemed Krishna. You are asking for these clothes? These clothes belong to Kamsa. What impudent fool you are asking for that which belongs to the king. Krishna wanted to show the world that there should be no priority in anyone's heart greater than serving him. We should take this particular pastime very, very personally. To think that anything belongs to anyone but Krishna is an illusion. And how did Krishna respond to the washerman? With his hand, he cut off his head. Actually, Krishna doesn't need Sudarshan Chakra. Because Sudarshan Chakra is such a great devotee, Krishna likes to engage him in his service. But Krishna doesn't need anything. With his very hand, he could cut off. As a super soul in the heart, he can cut any vein of the heart and kill anybody at any time. Krishna's pastimes are so wonderful and so exciting just to attract our hearts. That washerman got liberation by Krishna's inconceivable causeless mercy. Nanda Maharaj and the gopas arrived in Mathura soon after Krishna. The ladies of Mathura, when they saw Krishna and Balaram coming into the city, they were on the balconies and on the rooftops, crowded by the hundreds and thousands, showering flowers on Krishna and Balaram. It was a festival. Their hearts were so deeply charmed by the beauty of Krishna Balaram, by seeing their glances and their mercy. They were all speaking amongst each other about the ultimate good fortune of the residents of Vrindavan. Krishna pleased all the Yadus. Then he and Balaramji liberated Kuvalyapita. They defeated Chanura and Mushtika in the wrestling match. They defeated all the other wrestlers, liberated them. And ultimately, Krishna, with his bare hands, jumped on Kamsa, who had his mighty sword drew. He wrestled Kamsa down to the wrestling arena, and with one slap of the hand, Kamsa was finished. Krishna then coronated Ugrasena as king, released Vasudeva and Devaki from their imprisonment, and brought tremendous hope and joy to the entire Yadu dynasty, who were living in fear for years. At that time, Nanda Maharaj turned to Krishna and said, "Now you have accomplished your mission. It is time to come back to Braj." But Vasudeva and Devaki were weeping and crying, "You are our son. We never got to spend more than a few minutes with you. Please do not break our hearts by leaving us again." And all the Yadu dynasty, they were suffering such deep, profound separation. They were weeping, crying, "Krishna, to stay." Lord Sri Krishna turned to Nanda Maharaj and said, "My dear father, you should return to Braja immediately. If you do not go back at once, all the Brijavasis will die. You must go back, and you must tell them my promise that I will soon return. Nanda Maharaj was beside himself in grief, incessant tears with choked voice. My Lord, my little Gopal, how could I leave without you? I gave my word. I promised your mother and all the gopis and gopas that I would return with you. The only reason they are alive is on the basis of my promise. How could I come back without you? If they see me and you are not on the chariot, they will immediately die. Is that what you wish to do to your devotees? Who have given their hearts, their lives, their everything for you? Then Sri Dhamma spoke. Sri Dhamma said, O Govinda, you know our love for you. When we play with you in the pasture grounds during the daytime, if even a moment you hide behind a tree or a vine or a creeper or a rock or anyone else, we practically lose consciousness. We practically give up our life in separation for that few moments. How will we possibly survive if you send us back without you? When Krishna heard the words of Nanda and Sri Dhamma, he became silent. He fell helplessly under the control of their love. This was an emergency situation. Seeing what was happening, Vasudev, he stood forward and spoke to Nanda Maharaj. He said, Dear Nanda, you are my own brother. Would I do anything to hurt you? Everyone knows Krishna's love for the residents of Vrindavan. There is no possible way for him to remain here in Mathura for any length of time. The residents of Vrindavan cannot live without Krishna, and Krishna cannot live without the Brijavasis. He will soon return. However, he's at the age where he should receive the sacred thread from the ashram of Guru. Let me at least perform this service to Gopal, and then surely he will return. Nanda Maharaj heard Vasudev's words, and he looked to Krishna. Krishna was radiantly smiling. Nanda Maharaj understood that what Vasudev was saying was going to give pleasure to Krishna's heart. And ultimately, a devotee does not mind any pain. A devotee's only purpose is that Krishna is happy. If our hearts break and we suffer and die in separation, if that's what makes you happy, Krishna, let that be our life and soul. That was the spirit of Nanda Maharaj. But it was the hope that Krishna would fulfill his promise to come soon, that kept Nanda Maharaj alive. Krishna reconfirmed his promise, I will return soon. Nanda Maharaj saw Krishna's smile. He did not smile. Again and again fainting, with tears of separation flowing from his eyes, Nanda Maharaj and the Gopas returned to Brajdham. When the news had come that Nanda Maharaj's chariot has returned to Vrindavan, all the residents of Vrindavan, in great happiness, eager to celebrate the return of Krishna, ran with their hearts to the place of Nanda Maharaj. Seeing them all coming, Nanda Baba could not look at any of them. With a piece of cloth, he covered his face and wept tears. Without saying a single word to anyone, he returned to his house at Nandeshwaram. And there he laid on the ground and cried. When the residents of Vrindavan understood that Krishna has not returned, they were beside themselves with grief. The Srimad Bhagavatam explains the condition of the Brijavasis in separation from Krishna. The only thing that kept life in their hearts was Krishna's promise, I will return. Have faith in my words. If Krishna was to return, the residents of Mathura would not survive. He sent Akrura to give his messages to each of his loving devotees. He heard from Radharani, gopis, and gopas' mouths their state of consciousness. That our spirit souls are like pet domestic animals in a house. And our hearts, our bodies, and our minds are like the house in which the animal of the soul is living. In separation from Krishna, the heart, mind, and body is on blazing fire. Krishna, you are the master of your animals. Please, open the bolt that keeps us locked in this house. The bolt that keeps us living within these bodies is your promise that you will return. With that hope, we cannot die. Please take away that hope and let us die. Let us burn to death in separation. This was the mood of the Brijavasis. When Akrura saw their love, they would cover the earth with tears and make lakes, and then they would faint, and the heat of the fever of their separation would immediately evaporate the lake of their tears. Uddhava understood, Krishna has sent me to Vrindavan to understand what is real
love.
Akrura was recognized amongst the Yadus as the dearmost intimate friend and devotee of Lord Krishna. But when he saw the love of the Brijabasis in their separation, he considered he did not even have a single drop of affection for Krishna. And it was then and there that he prayed for the supreme benediction that he could become a blade of grass, a weed, or a shrub on the ground of Braj, so that the servants or the maidservants or the maidservants of the maidservants of gopis may someday place the dust of their feet atop his head. Shri Radha Gopinath ki jai. Shri Udupi Krishna ki jai. According to Sri Sanatan Goswami, when Uddhava returned to Mathura and explained the condition of the Brijavasis, Krishna was helpless. Krishna returned to Vrindavan, performed wonderful pastimes with gopis and gopas, and then Akrura came again and took him away. And then he returned again, and then Krishna, Akrura came and turned. But in their ecstatic love, neither Krishna nor the residents of Vrindavan even knew that Krishna was returning. This was the transcendental pastime of the Lord. They were in so much separation, they didn't even realize he was coming back. But he came back just to keep them alive. They had no clue that he was returning. Ultimately, he entered deep into their hearts and was lovingly reciprocating with their feelings from the core of their heart. In this way, due to their total absorption, Krishna gave the highest ecstasies of love to the Brijabasis in the feelings of separation. It was this highest realm of love that Lord Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to reveal to the world. Yes, there are many paths of spirituality. There are many authorized religious systems. The Lord has personally descended in this world in many times. Sometimes he sends his sons, his prophets, his devotees to reestablish the principles of religion, to annihilate the miscreants, and to protect devotees. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is declared to be the most magnanimous, most merciful of all incarnations. Why? Rupa Goswami explained, Namo Mahabhadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namane Gaurudveshe Namaha. Of all the great avatars, none is so magnanimous as Lord Chaitanya. Even Krishna is not so magnanimous. Yes, Krishna revealed these pastimes of Vrindavan, the highest realm of spiritual revelation. But he only awarded that to a chosen few. But now Krishna has appeared again as Lord Chaitanya to reveal the highest realm of the ecstasies of the devotees of Vrindavan and to distribute it freely to anyone and everyone who simply accepts his mercy associates with his devotees, and takes shelter of the congregational chanting of the holy names. It is explained that when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was living in Jagannath Puri at Gambhira, his ecstasies of love were the highest personification of spiritual bliss. Sometimes he was in the mood of gopis and Sri Radhika at the time when Uddhava came to give them message. Sometimes when he would see Lord Jagannath on the chariot, he would be plunged in the mood of the gopis when Akrura was taking Krishna away. Lord Chaitanya was revealing to the world these ecstasies as a devotee, but he came to the world to share the same ecstasies with his devotees. In the age of Kali, a time of quarrel, hypocrisy, a time of envy and deceit, a time when practically the entire population has rejected Krishna, and even in the name of religion, they want to become God, or they simply want God to fulfill their material desires. Lord Chaitanya, with straw between his teeth, is begging even these people. I have come with the fruits of the love of the Vrindavan Vasis. I have come with the highest realm of spiritual ecstasy. I have so many of these fruits. I cannot give them all away myself. Therefore, anyone who calls himself my devotee, I am requesting, appealing, please help me distribute these fruits of love of God. Srila Swarup Damodar Goswami, he has offered a famous prayer to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, explaining the supreme mercy of Lord Chaitanya. He has come to give freely to the world what no other avatar has ever given so freely. The conjugal mellows of Vrindavan's Leela, he's come to give the world. And he has asked his devotees to be instruments of his mercy. Thus, the great Guru Parampara of the Gaudiya Vaishnav Sampradaya is so very, very special. Because each one of these acharyas, their hearts are impregnated and empowered to give that mercy of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda to anyone who is willing to wholeheartedly receive it. When we glorify our beloved master, Srila Prabhupada, we're not just giving honor to a guru. We are recognizing the substance of the love that he is revealing in our hearts. And the great pains, struggles, and sacrifices that he underwent to give us entrance into the Lord's supreme loving abode. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, he describes many of the wonderful pastimes of Vrindavan. Not because any of us could understand them, When we talk about the love of the gopis for Krishna, it is only comprehensible to a mind, to a heart that is completely free of malice, ego, or envy. In fact, Krishna told Arjuna that you can understand these teachings of Bhagavad Gita because you are not envious. We cannot understand Bhagavad Gita unless we are free of envy. What to speak of the postgraduate study of Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam? Unless we're free of envy, we can't even understand the first verse of the first chapter of the Bhagavatam. What to speak of the 10th canto? Sukadeva Goswami explains that the pastimes of Krishna and gopis are transcendental. If one has real faith when they hear it, then hearing those pastimes will remove any traces of lusty desires in our heart. Now, Prabhupada emphasized that if you do not have that faith, then hearing these pastimes will have a very different effect. Prabhupada explains, if you're hearing the conjugal love affairs of gopis and Krishna, and even a trace of material desire appears in your heart, Prabhupada was very strong. Stop. Don't hear more. Your faith has not developed enough. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya and the six Goswamis of Vrindavan taught us how to cultivate the spirit of separation. When we hear about the love in separation of the residents of Vrindavan, our hearts becomes very, very deeply affected. It is explained that these wonderful, wonderful pastimes, which are so inaccessible to our intelligence, are revealed by great souls like Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami for different reasons according to different persons' levels of realization. To the Paramhamsas, they will simply relish the ultimate ecstasies hearing about the pastimes of Vrindavan. And to the neophyte devotees, at least we should understand what is the unique special quality of Lord Chaitanya's mercy in this world, which stands above and beyond all other theistic religious ideals. Unless we realize, or at least have a conceptual understanding of the glory, of the depth and richness of this mercy, of the realm of love that he is bringing into our lives, then we will not really be grateful to the Lord. We will not really be grateful to the acharyas who are bestowing his mercy in the world. So yes, it is very important to understand the nature of Lord Chaitanya's gift. It is very essential for us to at least have some comprehension of the unique, purest, highest contribution that Srila Prabhupada has presented to humanity at large. We are not concerned whether the masses come to our temple. We want to bring them. But in the age of Kali, it's usually just not like that. If someone can give people a little peace of mind while at the same time encouraging them to go on with their material life through some sweet words or some meditation, they're going to get millions of followers chasing after them. If someone could perform some magic tricks and show people that they are able to do what no one else can do, then millions of people will chase after them. If someone is teaching that God will fulfill all your desires, just enjoy in this world, believe, believe, and you will go to heaven, hundreds of millions of people will chase after such teachers. Should we question why everyone's going there? Why only a few people are here? Because what Srila Prabhupada is given is so deep, it is so rich, but it requires honest and sincere surrender. But Srila Prabhupada, carrying the mercy of Lord Chaitanya in his heart, has made that surrender relatively so easy. Just be happy in the Sangama Vaishnavas. Hear Srimad Bhagavatam. Give up sinful ways. Dance. Sing. To the kirtan of the holy names.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So simple that even an innocent little helpless child can attain perfection if we are simply honest and sincere. It does not matter whether we are Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras, or below, by caste designations. It does not matter whether we are Grihastha, Brahmachari, Vanaprast, or Sannyas, by ashram status. It does not matter whether you are man or woman, old or young, wealthy or poor, scholarly or uneducated. These are all temporary material designations. The only real requirement is that we are honest, we are grateful, we are sincere to open our hearts to receive the mercy and reciprocate by taking shelter of the Vaishnavas and the holy names. Srila Prabhupada said, better one moon in the sky, full moon, than many, many stars. But Lord Chaitanya's mercy is so great, he wants the sky to be filled with hundreds of millions of full moons. So understanding with gratitude the precious, unique gift of Braj Bhakti being presented in such a simple and approachable way. We want to never let go of the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada in the mood of the servants of his servants. And we want to go out by whatever means possible and share this gift with more and more and more and more people. The only thing separating millions of people from going back to Goloka Vrindavan is our enthusiasm to be pure and share the grace of Sri Guru and Gauranga. And help them drown the world with the names of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. Let us, at this time, drown the world with the Sankirtan of the Holy Name. For the Holy Name is the only means in this age that affords entrance into the highest realm of spiritual love. Let us sincerely absorb ourselves and help absorb all persons we come in contact with in the mercy of Lord Chaitanya.